happened. I broke up with him for 3 weeks. Same thing happened. I took him back because I kept wanting to see the good sides of him. And I did see the good sides in him. And I thought about his family. I thought about his daughter. And I thought about that I was becoming close to the family. And he said, you know, I don't know why I do these things. I'm so sorry. And I don't think he was lying. And I do have a therapist, and my therapist is like, it doesn't matter if he's lying or not, he's still doing these things, and there's been no change.
This is episode number 586. I am going to be coaching Mary. I don't know her. She's not a coaching client. And we're going to be talking about why she keeps dating men who are not kind. And I think this is a very relatable topic. Welcome back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you on your journey to lasting love, I've written two books. The first one is Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. And it's for women who want to succeed in all areas of their life and their love life. It's got 30 tips to help you do that. And the second book was released Valentine's Day of 2023. It's called Choice Points in Dating. And I wrote this book to empower people to make healthier choices at every stage of dating and relationships. You can find them both on Amazon for Kindle or paperback. Every week, I share a tip from the Woman of Value book. And this week's tip is step number 25, know when to say yes. When we don't know what we want to say yes to, we don't know what we want to say no to, and we don't know how to set boundaries. We also need to say yes to things that are risks, as like dating. We often will stay safe and not say yes to opportunities. My challenge to you this week is to say yes to something that you're frightened to do, something that you know will help you grow, something out of your comfort zone, and you will not be sorry. I can guarantee you that. And before I bring on Mary, I just want to invite you to join my Facebook group, Your Last First Date. Mary is actually a member of that group. This is a group of women over 40, mostly over 40, who want to really grow on their journey to their last first date. And so many groups do not really help support you. They just allow you to just vent, and we don't allow you to just vent. This is really a purpose-driven group with a lot of good guidelines. Join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest, Mary. Mary had written in, and here's what she said. Most of my life, I have dated and have been married to men that have not been kind, yet I would continue to give them chance after chance and think it would get better. It never would, yet I have found myself in the same type of relationships over and over again. I'd like to figure out why I give men chances when they have hurt me more than once. Welcome to the podcast, Mary.
Hi.
This is very painful to keep giving chances to men who don't treat you well. Can you give us a little bit more context, let's say, on maybe the last relationship that this happened in?
The last relationship that this happened in, I went out with the man for a little over a year. He started off nice, as they all do. He started off kind, sweet. I saw a good heart. I met his family, and everything was good for the first few weeks. This always seems to happen to me. Week like two or three, something happens. So the first thing that happened was I noticed he started drinking more. I tend to date men, even my ex-husband, that have, whether it's a substance abuse issue or past trauma that's never been dealt with. I don't know why I'm choosing this. I don't seek out to choose it. I met this particular man online on a dating app. And like I said, I met his family. His mother was wonderful. His sisters, his brothers were all kind and wonderful. And I never saw bad sides of any of his family. Yet with him, he drank. I don't know if I'd classify him as an alcoholic, but possibly. He could certainly go times without drinking because I'd say, you know, every time you drink, I see these mean sides of you and it's hurtful and it's uncomfortable. So there was different episodes that he would drink and be unkind, say mean and nasty things, be disrespectful of me, of my daughter even. My daughter's an adult. She lives with me. And He was extremely disrespectful of my daughter and her boyfriend. It was a kind of a sexual tone, but it wasn't towards my daughter. It was saying that her boyfriend was sexually wanting me, like things that were just really far out there. And my daughter's boyfriend's 24 years old. I'm in my later 50s. And, you know, even if he thought this was the case, you don't say things like that. And trust me, it wasn't the case. My daughter's boyfriend is a sweetheart. He's a nice kid. He's young. He's just caring and loving. That's how he is. It's kind of how he was brought up. And I was really, really hurt by this instance. I did break up with him over this instance, but it took me a little while. I didn't break up right away. I had a trip planned with him. I went on the trip. I saw things on the trip that were just so hurtful, over drinking again, bashing my daughter, bashing my daughter's boyfriend, bashing me, saying that, oh, all you're looking for is money. And, you know, these were totally not the case, just really mean and hurtful things. When we got back from the trip, I broke up with him. And it was 3 weeks later, he texted me or called me and said, hey, do you think we can, you know, go to lunch or go on a hike? I miss you. I want to see you again. I'm sorry. You know, he apologized. And I saw him and, you know, I took him back. We went back out and a similar thing happened again. And I broke up with him for 3 weeks. Same thing happened. I took him back because I kept wanting to see the good sides of him. And I did see the good sides in him. And I thought about his family. I thought about his daughter. And I thought about that I was becoming close to the family. And he said, you know, I don't know why I do these things. I'm so sorry. And I don't think he was lying. And I do have a therapist. And my therapist is like, it doesn't matter if he's lying or not. He's still doing these things. And there's been no change. He'll be nice, almost like love bombing, not with money, not with materialistic things, but with affection and promises that he'll do better. And the cycle just kept happening and happening and happening over and over again. And I finally broke up with him for good. I said to myself, I shouldn't be choosing this. I'm not going to trust that he's never going to drink again and do this. He did it to me probably 7 times. How many times, how many more chances can I give? And even though he was being kind and loving and affectionate and trying to stop drinking, something clicked in me that, you know what, I deserve more than this. And I can't trust that this is not going to happen again. And there were other things. It wasn't just the drinking and the being mean. He wasn't financially stable. And I'm like, why do I choose this? And I kept seeing the good in him. And that's why I would stay. So that's where I'm at now. I've broken up with him. It's been about a month. It's been hard. I do miss him still, but I started dating somebody new that's nice. So far, I don't know if it will change and I'm scared.
Right. So you want to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
Obviously. Thank you for sharing all of that. That's really painful. And it sounds like you gave him about 7 chances, which is actually very average for any kind of abuse. It takes about 7 times to leave an abusive relationship. I don't know if you knew that.
I did. It's funny you say that because the last boyfriend I had was abusive in a similar way, but it was 7 chances. And I'm very good friends with a woman who had been through similar situation. She's finally married. She's in her 60s to a wonderful man. Everybody adores him. But she said the same thing to me. And that's, mm-hmm. I learned it from her. And it mm-hmm. really did happen.
Yeah, it's because it is very difficult. You're focusing on the good and you'll always come back for the good. Even what you miss of him is the good, obviously not the bad. And that's why it imprints in your brain and in your body, the good parts. That's what you focused on. So that's one of your kryptonites, I would say, to look at the good, to give the benefit of the doubt when somebody doesn't deserve it, and to know, you know, when is somebody going to be a true deal breaker kind of person, and when should you give another chance? I think that's a big part of it. The other part is that when you break up with somebody, there have to be agreements around what changed, how did you make changes, and you have to be able to assess the changes. So breakups are not just based on getting back together, isn't based on how somebody said they changed or they promise you they'll be different. It's actions versus words, and it's actually not trusting until somebody proves that they have changed over time. So people have to earn their way back into your life. Let's talk first about a little bit about your childhood, because we get these patterns from a long time ago, from family of origin. Even though we don't always have the ability to make those connections, what were your parents like in terms of showing affection to each other?
First of all, I was adopted. I was adopted as an infant, very, very young, just a few days old. So nothing was hidden. But yet they told me they didn't really know the situation. All they said was, your mom loved you so much that she wanted to have, you know, you to have a better home. So I was definitely in an environment of love. My parents were, from what I saw, were very loving towards each other. My dad was a hard worker. My mom stayed at home, and my mom had a little bit of a temper. My dad did not. My dad was always kind and loving and caring. He was like the soft one, and my mom was more the disciplinarian. It's funny, I remember when I was, I don't know how old I was, maybe 10 years old, that my mom would be the one chasing me up the stairs with a wooden spoon. Sounds funny, but not really, you know, no. And a bar of soap for my mouth because I said a word that wasn't appropriate. But I was like 11 years old. So I never forgot that. Something obviously I would never do to my children, but maybe it's all my mom. You know, that's what she learned growing up. I don't know. My dad was never like that. Their relationship did seem really healthy. I mean, they were good to us. My dad gave me tons of love. My mom did too, but it was different. I'm getting a little choked up, but my dad died when I was a teenager. And he was sick. He died. And I think that has something to do maybe with, I don't know why I would choose men that are hurtful. Even though my dad didn't abandon me on purpose, I think it felt like abandonment. And then my mom, I always kind of said to myself, like, oh, I wish my mom died and not my dad. But I loved my mom. But it was just, I missed that, like, that kind of love and affection from my dad. I kind of think that's what it's from.
Yeah.
But I don't know why. Why wouldn't I choose a guy that's kind and loving and affectionate?
It sounds like love was a lot of mixed messages in your family. You had a loving mother who also chased you with a wooden spoon and a bar of soap. That's a very mixed message. I love you, and I'm really harsh. When you don't do what I say, I'm going to come after you. Your father was much more accepting and loving and more unconditional, it sounds like, in his love for you. And he died when you were a teen. You were also adopted, which can feel like abandonment for a lot of people. So I think there were two messages of abandonment in your life early on, and confusing messages about love. And so the kindness and the unkindness mixed together is kind of your mom. You know, I think there's a combination of that and the abandonment, the fear of abandonment. And so the fear of abandonment keeps you in these relationships, and the familiarity of kindness and cruelty together also keeps you connected to that family of origin relationship. And what we do unconsciously is we recreate these relationships so that we can heal them. Unconsciously, we try to heal them through the romantic relationships, the relationship we didn't have, like the ideal relationship that you would have wanted to have with your mom. that you couldn't have with your mom and that you couldn't have with your dad because he was gone. So you try to recreate these relationships with the men you date. It's a never-ending cycle because you can't recreate that. You can't heal the relationship with your parents with the romantic partners that are dysfunctional and replicate those relationships. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So the first thing is the awareness of here's what I'm doing. Here's why I'm doing it. This makes sense, right? It's my biology is telling me heal that relationship, keep finding partners who I can fix somehow. If I can make this man give up drinking, love me, be kind to me always, then I will have accomplished that. And the key is to do the internal healing so that you're not trying to heal somebody else who is not open to being healed.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't know why I can't. I've been seeing a therapist for like 8 years. So it's like, why haven't I healed this? Maybe because I keep choosing these men. I don't do it on purpose. And I do think I can fix them, you know?
Right. So knowing that you can't, knowing that you're now trying to choose somebody who's kind, I think that the key is when you notice that first sign of lack of kindness, how you deal with it. So not waiting seven times, but noticing that first sign of abuse and saying, I'm out. I can't be with somebody like this. So that's number one. The other thing is you've got to be really clear with your must-haves and deal breakers. Like they have to be front and center. And what I have always said is one deal breaker makes all the must-haves null and void. Doesn't matter how kind, smart, loving that person is, how intelligent he is, if he is abusive in any way, if he has untreated addiction, if he is unkind to you, that is deal breaker. I'm out. I'm moving on. There are always more people out there. So do you know your deal breakers and must-haves?
I'm learning them.
Okay. Can you share some?
Yeah, I finally, you know, because I dated two alcoholics, you know, like I said, it's hard to, you don't know, can't always classify someone as an alcoholic, but if someone consistently drinks a number of drinks and gets mean, I mean, I would say that's a problem with alcohol or an unhealthy relationship. So one of my deal breakers would be substance abuse. Also, you know, I've kind of said, if you're mean to me once, that's a deal breaker. You can have misunderstandings. You can have, you know, issues come up that someone might be a little angry, but when you're out and out mean to me and nasty to me, that's a deal breaker. Kindness to obviously me and other people, how they treat the wait staff, that's a deal breaker. And the funny thing is the man that I recently dated, sometimes he treated the wait staff well and sometimes he didn't. And it usually revolved around when they would stop serving him alcohol. He got mean and nasty to them. So that's a deal breaker. Smoking is a deal breaker now for me. I just absolutely can't stand it. It's an addiction. I dated a smoker and I it's a deal breaker for me. So a must have, someone that lives a healthy lifestyle, somebody that cares about their health, somebody that will do something about an addiction. I would also say a must have would be financial stability, not necessarily having to make more money than me or having more money than me, but just being able to live on their own and make wise financial decisions. Sure, everybody might make a mistake here and there, but overall, to not live beyond your means and to just, you know, think about your future as far as your retirement goes and make wise decisions. At the moment, that's all I can think of is true deal breakers and true must-haves. I'm really flexible about height. They don't have to be the cover of GQ. Okay. I would like someone that wants to, you know, do some athletic things like hiking and things like that. So I would say that's a must-have for me too.
Mm-hmm. I would say that a lot of your deal breakers fall under one category, which is untreated addictions. any kind of untreated addictions, and smoking is an addiction, substance abuse is, so is, you know, alcoholism, all that stuff. And the other one is being unkind to you or other people, even once, without apologizing, really unkind, like stepping over that line. And there have to be others. I would say somebody who makes, somebody who has an unhealthy lifestyle would be on your deal breaker list. And someone who's financially irresponsible. The opposites, kindness to you and others, healthy and active lifestyle, responsible in all ways is something I added, which means that they're both financially responsible, but also in communication, in being considerate, being compassionate, all of those things that you were missing before. Somebody who's willing to talk things out, not just yell at you. Somebody who knows how to deal with their own stuff, has taken responsibility for their own trauma, because everybody's got it. And if somebody has gone to therapy and is really taking responsibility for mistakes they made and is willing to do better, I think that's going to be a huge must-have for you. And someone who makes good decisions, you know, you talked about financial decisions, somebody who makes good decisions in general, who doesn't, who isn't reckless and making poor decisions. And so if you have these front and center as you're dating, and the first time you see an untreated addiction or you see an unhealthy lifestyle and you address it, I don't date people with any kind of addictions. It hasn't worked out for me. And you walk away. Being able to follow through on these commitments, not just go, they are nice to have, because they're not just nice to have, they're must-haves. There's a reason why we have very few of these, because they have to be followed through on. Having that list front and center every single time you go on a date, even on a first phone call, seeing if a person never asks you a question, seeing if a person is talking about themselves the entire time and you try to redirect them. So my whole thing is also, we have to step up and say what we need, and we have to redirect conversations that feel like they're selfish. Maybe they're just nervous. We don't know right away. So by saying, is there anything that you would like to know about me? Instead of just walking away, first we have to find out, is that person just nervous? And if they get angry at that question, then we know this person has an anger issue. The person is not compassionate and considerate. And so asking good questions, really getting curious, not leaving things to chance and just kind of rolling with the relationship and kind of going with the flow, but asking the hard questions. Tell me about your past relationships. How did they end? What did you learn from them? Like, do you ever ask questions like that when you're dating?
I do sometimes ask questions, but I don't always ask a lot of questions about a past relationship. Maybe only because my past relationships have been, you know, pretty much all abusive. And I don't want to relive it. So I don't want to have to tell them about, and not that I've done anything wrong, but also, you know, I feel like if they're going to ask me about my past relationships, then it's going to sound like, oh, it was all the guy's fault. It was all the guy's fault. So basically I say, oh, you know, the last man I dated had a problem, you know, an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. So I kind of just leave it alone. And I might ask them a little bit, but I don't elaborate.
I'm not expecting you or anyone to disclose your entire past to anybody. You're just meeting. These are things that if you end up in a relationship and it is relevant to that relationship, then you can bring stuff up. My whole point here is to find out what the learning was for yourself and for others. And so what you want to see is, did they learn anything? Like, you learned a lot of things. You learned what you don't want to do. You learned what you do want to do. You learned that you don't want to ever date somebody who's going to be mean again. You learned to look for signs and speak up early on. You learned that you've tolerated some bad behaviors in the past that you won't do again. And, you know, you stayed. That's our responsibility. If you stay because you were doing the best you could at the time, but we all do these things. It's not because we're bad people. It's because we don't yet have the skills. And so what you're looking for is somebody who is willing to admit that there were things they needed to learn and doesn't just throw the the ex under the bus. So a good way to ask that question is not to come right out and say, what did you learn from your past relationship? I like what one of my former guests, Duana Welch, said, which is, if your ex was here with us right now on this date, what would they say is the reason the relationship ended? And do you agree or disagree? So it's kind of a backdoor way of getting into that conversation. And it's more playful because most people will say, well, my ex would say I'm lazy. Well, do you agree with that? Yeah, I'm kind of lazy. Okay. Did you change at all since your marriage ended? You know, and then you could answer the same thing. My ex might say this, but it's more playful and it's a little bit more revealing too, because you're not interrogating that person and they might tell you more. I just think it's important to know that they are willing to admit the truth about themselves, not go through a whole long conversation about how horrible that person was.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer. When you shared about how you said this was really hurtful, this is not okay, I'm going to break up with you, that's the follow through. I'm going to break up with you. This is not tolerable. When you come back without agreements, that's where you slip up, because you miss that person's kindness. Maybe you miss the sex. Maybe your body has become addicted to that part. And that's what happens. Our brain has this bias that we forget all the bad stuff and just miss the good parts. And so what's important in those moments also is to write out, these are the things that did not work and will not work. You know, it's like you need to be so super clear that this was hurtful. There is nothing that he has done to change his behavior. He wants me back because he's lonely. I want him back because I'm lonely. These are bad reasons to get back together.
Yeah.
And also understanding that the fear of abandonment, the familiarity with hot and cold, with good and bad, is in your DNA. It's part of your DNA. And so you have to work extra hard to create new neural pathways. And so you're looking for somebody who's more securely attached, and they may be a little bit more boring. They may present as really liking you and being consistent, and that might be hard for you in the beginning. So tell us about the guy that you're seeing now. You said he was kind so far, and how long has it been? And
so I met him about 3 years ago. I do some personal assistant work, and I met him at one of the homes I do the work at. He was doing some electrical work there. They're having like major renovations on their house for the past 4 years. So I met him there, just kind of said hi, and he was always friendly. And then just coincidentally, after I broke up with my boyfriend, we happened to be talking more one day. So it was like, I don't know, a week or so after I broke up with my boyfriend. And he asked me a question, and he's like, oh, can you send me that information? We were talking about some event coming up. And I said, sure. So I did. And then he ended up asking me out and said, hey, you know, would you like to go out Saturday night? And I said, sure. So that's how I met him. It was kind of nice for a change to not meet somebody online. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that felt different for me. And it felt really nice because I know him. I know his background. I know people that know him. So it felt more comfortable for me. So we went out on that date, and it was a really nice time. It was just a few hours. We went out for dinner and a drink. And the first date was very good because he didn't drink a lot. I had one drink. He had two beers. That was it. And it was funny, we actually had a little discussion about alcohol, because he happened to say he dated someone that was an alcoholic and it didn't work out. I said, oh, I did too, and kind of just left it there. So it's already a good start to the relationship that I'm like, oh, almost relieved he doesn't have an alcohol problem. So that felt really, really good. And then he texted me and showed interest and asked me out again. And it's kind of nice because we're not texting every day, maybe every other day. And he checks in sometimes, I check in sometimes, which is nice. And so we went out again. And so we've been just been dating for 2 weeks. So far, he's been nice. He's been consistent. He's been considerate. He's been kind. He's been divorced maybe about 3 or 4 years. And he has a little bit of issues with his ex-wife. Sounds like she was a bit of a narcissist. And he has a few children. And there's some custody issues that he really wants to see his kids more. And he's working on, you know, he sees them at least on every other weekend, once a week. But there's some issues that he's working through. So he's having a little bit of anxiety over that, which he shared a little bit with me.
So far so good, but you've had so far so good before. So we want to make sure that it stays good. And so some of the things that we've talked about today, like asking hard questions up front, finding out a little bit more, are going to be important in this relationship. You've already gotten some information about his past and about him not wanting to be with an alcoholic. So you know that that's not an issue, which is good. But it is important to get curious. Like, somebody who calls their ex a narcissist is a little bit of a yellow flag for me, because he chose her. He stayed with her. So again, the responsibility piece. Ask him about if your ex was with us now, what would she say is the reason the relationship ended? Because you're going to hear what she's calling him, and find out if there's any truth to that. Does he think it's true? Because that's going to give you more information than somebody labeling someone. And the issue with still holding on to anger at an ex and still having feelings, and I'm imagining that you have a lot of feelings about your ex still, it's difficult not to feel those feelings and to compare and to start doubting, questioning. All those things can happen. And so both of you are going to have to navigate those things as you continue. And so if you have a thought and you have curiosity, make sure to ask the hard questions. So that's the first thing. The second is, when you're feeling anxious, one of the best tools for anxiety that I have found is Byron Katie's work. And it involves 4 questions. And the questions are, is this true? The first question, is this true? So let's say he doesn't text you for 2 days and you think, oh my God, he found somebody else. He doesn't really care about me, right? I see you smiling over there. I have a feeling this might have come up for you once or twice.
He doesn't like me. What happened? Yes, what did I do?
Am I too old? Did I gain weight? We go through every question. So the first question is it true? And we may say, well, yeah, maybe it is true, right? Maybe he doesn't like me. But the next question is, do I know without a doubt, 100% without a doubt, if it's true? And usually by the time we ask ourselves that question, no, we don't know without a doubt, because there's still, we don't have any information. We're making up stories. And the next question is, who do I become when I believe these thoughts? So when you believe that he likes somebody else or he doesn't like you, what happens to you? Who do you become?
When I start thinking that way, because I actually follow your podcasts and I'm part of the group and I listen to so many podcasts because I know I have anxiety. I know I have anxious attachment, so I'm working on it. So when I do start to think that way, it's almost like an automatic response. I'm like, oh, he didn't text me today. And I don't really say, oh, did he find someone new? But I'm like, oh, is there something he didn't like about me? And then I try to ground myself and I breathe and I say, no, stop thinking this way. And I've actually learned that before. Is it true? Do you know beyond a shadow of a doubt? And I say, no, I don't know. I just have to try to relax, try to breathe. And another thing too that I did, I didn't hear from him for like a day and a half. And instead of me sitting here worrying and having anxiety, and I just reached out and said, hey, how's your day going? And he got right back to me and said, oh, wow, thanks for reaching out. I was so busy yesterday. And I was like, oh, but sometimes I don't want to be like, oh, I need a man. I need him to relieve my anxiety. I want to learn ways to relieve it without having that. And it's not like a dopamine hit. That's not what it is. It's just, how can I find ways to relieve the anxiety and not worry about it? So that's what I like. The text made me so happy, and oh, now I feel fine. But I want to be able to feel fine without the text from him.
Exactly. So it's good that you reached out. It's good that you're asking yourself the first questions. And it is really important to ground yourself, because it's so easy to spiral. And we can't rely on other people to calm us. But when you're in a healthy relationship, you can let him know. Like, if this goes on and you become exclusive and all the good things happen, you can say, I have an anxious attachment style. And when I don't hear from you for a while, like if you leave my text unread, and then I can make up stories, and I don't want to make up stories. So if you can just even like the text or tell me I'm busy, I'll get back to you later, that would really help me. So it's designing, here's what I need from you, what do you need from me? Which, these are agreements. In healthy relationships, we create agreements. We talk about our conflict style. We talk about what will happen when I get triggered. This is what I go to. I'll make up the worst possible story. And I'm working on calming myself, and I'm doing meditation, and I'm doing mindfulness. And yet, this is so hardwired in me that it really helps me when you just give me a quick hello. Designing what you need and asking him, what do you need? You know, how have you sabotaged things in the past? What would you need? What's your go-to when you get triggered? Do you disappear? You know, so I know in advance. And what would you need from me when you're upset? These are the kinds of adult conversations that most of us never have and are really important. So that's part of how we design as we go. But I would say, just to go back to the, is this true conversation, and those, that process, the last part of it is to turn the thoughts around. And we do that by looking for contrary evidence. What do I know about him so far? Has he shown me any evidence that he is criticizing me, that he is going to disappear, that something happened? No. Right? So we look at the facts versus the story. And we tend to make up the story based on very little. And so focus on the facts. That's another really important piece. To kind of review, your must-have and deal-breaker lists have to be front and center. One deal-breaker, you're out. If it's something that is negotiable, you talk about it. I noticed that you were really reactive. I want to be with somebody who's kind. Is something going on for you? And see how he responds, right? So if somebody can respond kindly to a confrontation, to having a hard conversation, then that's going to be somebody who you could probably negotiate with, and that's a good sign. Then the other thing that we didn't talk about is about debriefing dates. And I do this with clients. You want to look at every single date in the beginning and ask yourself, how do I feel? How does my body feel? Am I getting my needs met? Do I feel relaxed? Am I intrigued by this person, or am I bored? Do I feel attractive in their presence? You know, there are really important questions, and noticing any red or yellow flags that show up and addressing them right away. So you really have to look. Every single date is an opportunity to debrief and ask yourself if it's still working for both of you. And then go through that process of, is this true, when you have anxiety, when you have questions, and speak up when you're feeling hurt or when you're not clear what's really going on, ask questions. And the trust that you build with somebody happens over time. People earn your stories. They earn those longer stories that you talked about before over time. They don't get all access to you right away. So they don't get your whole body. They don't get your whole story. They don't get everything. They build. And if you're a person who might give a lot before somebody has earned your love and affection, take your time, build the trust. Is that your pattern that you give right away, that you get so excited that you start to give and you don't have a lot of agreements up front?
Usually, yeah. But it's funny with this new guy, it's actually just organically starting off slow. So maybe somehow, I've learned and it's nice. I like it slow much better.
So slow and steady, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's actually good that he doesn't text you all the time. You don't want that. That's anxiety. And it's when you notice a pattern shifting, that's when you have to address it. You know, when somebody has been texting you a lot and suddenly there's a dip, or somebody's called you and then you feel that you're only comfortable when you're together, but when you're apart, you don't even know each other exists. So it's still new and you have an opportunity to build slowly and see, is this working for me? So focus back on you. So I gave you a lot of homework, but let's just review the homework. So the homework is to make sure that your deal breaker must have list is front and center and keep checking it. One deal breaker, address it. If it's a true deal breaker, like addiction stuff, you're going to get out because you don't want to do stuff that you've done in the past. Then you're going to start debriefing every day. Ask yourself, is this working for me? Am I feeling good? Am I feeling good in my body? Is my body relaxed? And do I feel attractive in his presence? And am I still intrigued? Is this relationship creating some curiosity in me? Are they treating me with kindness and respect? So you're going to keep debriefing. When you feel anxious, you're going to go through, is this true? And you're going to look for contrary evidence and to show yourself that you need to focus on fact versus story. You're going to address issues as they come up and not leave them. And you're going to build trust slowly over time. So how does that sound?
That sounds good.
Okay.
It makes a lot of sense. And it will be really good to almost follow, write it down, have it in front of me. And every day before and after, remind myself of these things, because I get caught up in like, oh, I'm so excited about this person that I just boom, forget all those things.
Yeah. So you want to value yourself so much that you don't let yourself down. Because every time you don't follow these lists of deal breakers and must-haves, you're actually letting yourself down. And you're the only one who can abide by these things, right? You get to choose how you date, who you date, and who you continue to date. And to remember that the man doesn't hold all the power. I think that's another issue that a lot of women go through is, I hope he chooses me time and time again. But to remember that you're also choosing, that you get to choose after every single interaction, how it's working and whether you want to stay or go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, will you let me know how it goes? I love
when
people get back to me and leave a little voice note and let me know how this is all working. Cause I think you're in a better position having started with somebody who seems more trustworthy. He's definitely not an alcoholic, and you'll continue to get to know him, because if this one doesn't work out, he's certainly a step in the right direction, and you're breaking a pattern already. So you should be very proud of that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mary, for allowing me to coach you on the podcast. And I look forward to hearing your follow-up.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate everything.
You're welcome. And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you love our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And as always, here's to your last first date. If you are ready to get unstuck gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.